You're listening to Simple Flight Aviation Radio with Al Waterloo and Mark Heppner on www.simpleflight.net.
Simple Flight Radio, ready for takeoff.
What do you think about flying? Is it a sport? A business? Is it easy or difficult? Is it boring or exciting? Alan Waterloo and Mark Heppner think it may be any of those things, but they like to make it simple. This is Simple Flight Radio, where Mark and Al talk about the many aspects of aviation and the amazing people doing amazing things to make this world a better place.
Well, the lights are out at the Super Bowl tonight, but guess what? The power is on here at Simple Flight Aviation Radio. Good evening, everyone. Happy Super Bowl Sunday, and more power to you if you're listening to us tonight.
Well, I understand that everyone left the Super Bowl because they wanted to listen to us. But I tell you, listening to that Super Bowl shuffle, that brings back some memories.
It does. I remember I was born. Well, I don't remember that I was born, but I say somebody told me I was born in 1985.
I think it was your mother.
Yeah, exactly. And the legal rights on my birth certificate say that. And that's the season of the 86 Super Bowl where the Bears won. Can you believe it?
The 1985 edition and 1986, 46-10. I remember that game very well.
Very, very well. That's good. I think that that's a, that's pretty cool. But, you know, I'm kind of glad the lights are out at the Super Bowl.
Well, yeah,
we can deliver.
We can deliver since they can. I actually think it's kind of funny. I was thinking about what were we thinking when we said, hey, the show must go on. And
you know what? Last week it was a sheet of ice, and now this week it's the Super Bowl.
A sheet of darkness.
Yeah. Well,
I don't know. It just happens to be a piece of sheet of something. I don't know.
That's funny.
Wow. The Sunday night chuckle is starting early, folks. I love it.
Oh, I wouldn't call it that. We're going to be right on schedule with my Sunday night chuckle.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, you know what? I got to say, I'm really glad that it is, it's Sunday night again. It feels like it was just yesterday we were talking to Pat Flanagan, last week, but,
yeah, it was a fast week.
It was a fast week. I can't believe it. Now we're back here again. The 49ers are playing the Ravens, and, you know, I'm going to remain neutral on the subject because obviously, a couple people, this is how a conversation went earlier today, said, hey, you going to watch the Super Bowl? I'm like, yeah, when is it? And they're like, in 30 minutes. I'm like, oh. Oops.
I mean, I knew it was, but somehow, you know, me, I don't think I'm that much different from others. I say, hey, the Bears aren't in the game. I'd rather talk aviation. I want to be at Simple Flight Radio. And then I realize it's not the game. It's the party.
Yeah.
Right? You know,
yeah,
that's what we're messing with people. And so I suspect this week we'll have a lot of people on the archives and the podcast. So if you're listening to this, I hope your hangover is better. And you're feeling better, but we've got
a real good handful of listeners right now. So we are the party, Mark.
We are the party. Yeah. Well, you know what's funny is our guest, I think, is probably saying, what was I thinking? But we're going to have a great show tonight.
And, absolutely.
She has confirmed that she'll be on while she is at a Super Bowl party.
Yeah, exactly.
But, a person of commitment and saying, hey, I made the commitment. I will be there. With a smile on her face.
Yeah, exactly. Just like the U.S. mail.
I don't know about the smile on their face, but yeah, the commitment, absolutely.
Rain, sleet, snow, or shine, or the Super Bowl Sunday, we are here.
Bingo.
Bingo. So if you were to fly down to the Super Bowl right now, you would need a reservation.
I would think so.
Yeah, absolutely. There's
probably a good TFR in place.
Yeah, pretty good TFR in place. You got a, what else do you have? I flew down to New Orleans, for the Sugar Bowl in 2011, it was. And,
who was playing?
It was Arkansas versus Ohio State.
The Ohio State?
The Ohio State.
Oh, okay.
It was, who is Jim Trussell's last
Trussell,
game?
Trussell, yeah.
Before, all that went down.
ATWD.
Yep, exactly. That's there you go. There he goes again.
Mr. Acronym.
He's lighting it off.
Yeah, woo! By the way, who are you?
I'm Al Waterloo.
And I'm Mark Eppner. Yes. Just in case. I didn't want to get like 3 hours into the show and then not realize we didn't.
Hello.
Yeah, who are
yeah.
we?
Well, that's all right.
But we are at Simple Flight Radio at PWK or KPWK.
We are who we are.
We are. At Palwaukee. And actually, all the jets on the ramp have disappeared. I guess everyone must have decided to pull in their planes in the hangar and get to a TV.
Yeah, well, exactly. There was, well, earlier when we showed up, there was a Challenger 300 and a, I want to say a Phenom 300.
Yeah, and there was also customs here that with the Geiger counter and all going through it. So someone was coming in from
international. Yeah, exactly. Somebody already sent a tweet in, Ohio OSU sucks.
Ooh.
I couldn't agree more.
I think that was from Jim Trussell.
Yeah. Exactly.
Burt Reynolds, yeah.
Exactly.
Okay, yeah. That's true.
Yeah. Well, you know, we've already been laughing quite a bit. You know, we probably spent about 3 minutes laughing. And you know what's funny is, as we're going along here, we can record, you know, we've got our recording going on here and making sure everything runs smoothly. But last week, you know, we started listening to the show and you hear's like, oh, here's Al's laugh. And then you can see a distinctive signature in the in the audio waves and things like that. And then you're like, oh, here's another one, and another one, and another one.
Yeah, it is funny for what you're trying to describe for our listening audience. Think of it as, I can't even think of the right word now, but like a finger, a voice print.
Yeah.
As it scrolls across the screen, and when Al laughs, it is very, very identifiable. There it is again, yeah.
There it is. Yeah. It's funny. It's like this, like skinny little, it's like a lie detector test going nuts or something.
LDT.
Yeah, right. So, but, anyway, that's kind of a, it's a good time. So let's get my laugh on the screen again tonight,
right.
Mark.
Well,
let's
gonna
go
try.
For it. You can do it.
This is Super Bowl. I'm up against big competition, but, you know, I was thinking about, this in a school, you know, how could I tie aviation and school together?
Yeah.
And so we always heard about the little Johnny jokes. This one's a little bit different, but this was a fifth grade class.
Yeah.
And a teacher gave her fifth grade class an assignment. And she asked each of their kids to get their parents to tell them a story with a moral at the end of it.
Uh-huh.
So the next day the kids came back and one by one began to tell their stories. This little girl, cute little girl, her name was Kathy.
Yeah.
And Kathy said, well, my father's a farmer and we have a lot of egg-laying hens. And one time, we were taking our eggs to market in a basket. And they were on the front seat and we hit a bump and all the eggs went flying and broke and made a complete mess of the car.
Ooh.
And the teacher said, and Kathy, what's the moral of the story? And she said, well, don't put all your eggs in one basket. Very good, said her teacher. So next, little Lucy wanted, you know, she didn't want to be outdone by her arch enemy, Kathy. And she raised her hand and she said, well, our family is farmers too, but we raised chickens for the meat market. And we had a dozen eggs one time, but when they hatched, we only got 10 live chicks. So the moral of that story is don't count your chickens until they're hatched.
Whoa.
That's a fine story.
Yeah.
So, Johnny, do you have a story to share? Yes, ma'am. So his dad told him the story about Aunt Marge.
Aunt Marge.
So this is the connection to work with me. This is the connection to the aviation because Aunt Marge was a pilot during Desert Storm.
Whoa.
And her plane got hit.
Ooh.
Right? Yeah, pretty sad. And she had a bailout over enemy territory and all she had was a bottle of whiskey, a machine gun, and a machete.
Whoa.
So she didn't want the bottle to break on the way down, so she drank the entire bottle of whiskey on the way down in the parachute. And when she landed right in the middle of 100 enemy troops, she took care of 70 of them with the machine gun until all the bullets ran out.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Then the next 20 she took care of with the machete until the blade broke. And then she killed the last 10 with her bare hands.
Whoa.
So her teacher was absolutely horrified, and she said, what kind of moral did your daddy tell you from that horrible story? He said, stay away from Aunt Marge when she's been drinking. Yeah. All right, not my best effort. I see the fingerprint, the voice print.
Yeah, exactly. It's, oh man, it filled up the entire screen. Wow, well that's kind of a, yeah, that's a
yeah, sorry, I don't usually bring anything with death and destruction in it, but what can I say? It was, when I was putting all this together, it tickled my fancy.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Well that's a, that's, yeah, don't mess with Aunt Marge.
Yeah.
If you were to bail out of an airplane.
When she's been drinking.
Yeah, yeah, exactly, exactly. So, if, here's a question for the listeners. If you were to bail out of an airplane, what would you want to have on you? And, for survival gear. And I guess a bottle of whiskey is fair game, but,
it depends if I'm going into 100 enemy troops or if I'm just going down into a tropical island.
Yeah.
Yeah. If I jump out of an airplane, all I want is a parachute.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly. Which reminds me of another joke, but I'll save that for another week.
Right, right, absolutely. Well, Mark, the weather is supposed to get pretty pretty rough here tomorrow. Did you look at any of the taps or anything for Chicago?
No, I confess to only having a little bit of the TV weather information. And I know there's snow coming. Let me just say that. I just don't know how much. We've actually gotten away pretty good for February 3rd.
We have. We certainly have. But you know what's a nice town is Denver, Colorado.
I love Denver.
Yeah, absolutely. I would vote that in the summertime. I've never seen a city with more rainbows than Denver, Colorado. There's so many rain showers every day. And, you know, there's just magnificent rainbows all over the place. But, regardless, there's a pretty, you know what the Palwaukee or the Chicago Executive Airport equivalent is out in, Denver?
Yeah, it would be, is it Centennial?
It is.
Yeah.
It is. So let's see what we got going on at Denver Centennial. I think
yeah,
it's,
let's
it's
get
a,
the weather.
It's a pretty cool,
17 Celsius. Altimeter 2, Niner, Niner 1. Remarks. Density altitude 6,400.
Not bad.
Denver Centennial Airport. Automated weather observation 0212 Zulu. Wind 310 at 08. Visibility 10. Sky condition broken 14,000. Broken 18,000. Temperature 07 Celsius.
Wow. 7 Celsius. It's not too bad.
Not at all.
Celsius.
First one to tweet in what 7 Celsius is in Fahrenheit wins.
What do they win?
I don't know. They just win.
Bragging rights.
Yeah, bragging rights, and maybe the power, you know, the power will turn on at the Super Bowl, the Superdome.
I hope not. Right now, I'd like our listenership.
Exactly.
Not that I'm a competitive source.
Yes, exactly. You know exactly. What? Somebody was voting. Somebody just tweeted in, Mark, you should have done the Super Bowl 2013 halftime stand-up show.
Oh, they have
you one. Are getting famous with your Sunday night chuckle.
Actually, I can't remember what last week's was, but I think I got a belly buster from you. I just felt leaving because if you laugh at the joke, then I feel like yeah, you know, I kind of did my job. I added value to the show.
Yeah, you do every day,
but
and
makes me smile.
Well, anytime we get feedback, you end up getting a everybody says, "Hey, I really like the SNC." The Sunday night shock. I yeah. did it. I pulled a Mark Eppner with that.
Mr. Acronym on your side. I think exactly. I'll let you get away with it this one
Thank
time.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. But did you have a good week in aviation?
Yeah. I hesitate only because during the week I didn't get much in, but on Friday night at the end of a long work week, I was able to come out to the airport. And as you know, I was completing a transition course into the Bonanza V-35B. And got signed off, and at the same time, they signed off on an IPC and a biennial, so it was a really efficient use of my time, and I really like that airplane. It's not my SR-22,
right?
Which you know is my favorite airplane.
Yeah, but, you really like that one.
I love it. Actually, I flew a safety pilot in the SR-22 this afternoon for one of our other club members.
Yeah.
But, yeah, the Bonanza, to be PIC, there's a lot going on. It flies great visibility. And, you know, just another one to put in the logbook. How about you? What did you do this week?
Well, I went up to Duluth, Minnesota, and, it was a lot of fun. So do you know what's in Duluth?
Cirrus Aircraft.
Yeah,
the
exactly.
Manufacturer of my favorite airplane.
You got it. So I was up there and I, got my CSIP certification. And that
That's Cirrus Standardized Instruction Program,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly. It is. It's a, I guess it's the mini type rating, for instructors to give, everything's qualified instruction, but, you know, a lot of insurance companies now require, checkouts and instruction, in Cirrus is to be with a CSIP instructor. So, you know, that was really nice. It was fun going up there.
Oh, I bet. You know what? I have to admit, I've heard mixed reviews on the CSIP program, but I went through the transition course and I enjoyed it. You know, I at least my instructor, I assume he stuck to the syllabus really well when I first got checked out several years ago and put me through my paces. You know, under the hood, runaway trims,
right?
All the different scenarios, and I felt good about what he did and good about what I learned over that X number of flights.
Exactly. No, that was pretty cool. I really enjoyed going there. They showed a lot of different things, and you know, there are mixed. I think Cirrus even knows that there's mixed reviews about the program, but I think that with the right instructor, you can capture the true essence of what the program really is, and I think it should turn out okay.
Yeah, I'm sure it will. And that's exciting. We'll have another CSIP in our flying club and give us a chance to check out even more Cirrus pilots.
Yeah, exactly. So you know what they what was pretty interesting though is I left that the program, and I was like, holy cow, I could not believe. I don't even think Cirrus realizes what they have, you know, in terms of a machine and a product in an airplane.
Really?
I think
that they would after all these years.
Yeah. Well, no, I know that they know what they have. You know what I mean? But I don't think that they may realize how truly awesome it is. You know, I was sitting through the ground school portion of this, and I was like, "Holy cow! This thing's built like an airliner." And you know, it's a very entrepreneurial company on many different levels, and not just developing a cool product to fly, but a couple other things with insurance and you know, and the training programs themselves. It was just a lot of fun. I enjoyed really being in Duluth, a fun town.
I would imagine a little bit cold, but you know, I'll take your word for it that you had a fun time.
Yeah, exactly.
I haven't spent a lot of time. Actually, I've had the pleasure of spending a day up at Cirrus probably last summer.
Yeah.
And matter of fact, I had the opportunity to fly 5000 Juliet, their yellow, the 5000 Cirrus SR that was made.
Yeah.
That was pretty cool to be able to fly that from Duluth to Chicago.
Yeah, right. Hey, we got another tweet in. It says somebody's proposing a drinking game. It says every time Al says exactly on air, start drinking. Take a sip. Yeah. I think that's awesome.
Yeah, but if what's the shut off? Otherwise, we'll be drinking for 2 hours.
That's cool. Yeah. Well, that's pretty awesome. I like that.
Yeah. Awesome. That's the other one.
Yeah.
Maybe if we drink when you say exactly, and then we eat when you say awesome.
Oh man, you don't want to eat when I say awesome because then you're going to be everybody's going to be
obese.
Yeah, I guess. Yikes.
Yikes. Yikes. Yikes. Yikes. Hey, what about this day in aviation history?
I got one back in 1995. So that was 10, 18. I'm doing mental math here and I'm
No, you're not. But, that's what's scary.
Is that 18 years ago? Yeah, it is.
Yes.
Yeah, in 1995, the spaceship shuttle Discovery launched a mission number STS-63 with the first ever female shuttle pilot, Lieutenant Colonel Eileen Collins, as the pilot in command.
Wow.
Isn't that cool?
Yeah, 1995, you would think it would have been earlier than that.
Yeah, right. Right. I think it would have been earlier. I don't know. I guess, you know, I wasn't too familiar with the shuttle program. You're looking at me all funny.
I only do it to those that are deserving of whatever I'm doing to those.
Yeah.
Whatever
yeah.
that means.
I yeah, don't know. Right. Hey, we got somebody to tweet in.
Celsius
44.6 degrees was, the Celsius, conversion and all that. Holy cow, it's from our live studio audience too.
Well, I figured it'd be easier to tweet it than rudely interrupt.
Well, you could have written it on the board behind us.
Yeah, exactly. Here's another one. We got, Somebody proposed no drinking game when he says exactly, just when he laughs. We'll all have to have our stomachs pumped.
We just got a lot of pleasant visuals for tonight, don't we?
Yes, it is Super Bowl Sunday. The power's out at the Superdome.
Is it still out?
I don't know. I would assume
our monitor is set to something else.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, wait a minute. It's not a monitor. That's a window.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Very nice. So,
okay, so I have a couple this day in aviation history.
Yeah.
You know, I would be remiss. No one likes to talk negative stuff. We purposely avoid talking about air crashes and things like that. But this is the day that the music died.
Ooh. 1959. Buddy Holly.
Buddy Holly, Ritchie Valens, Big Bopper. 1947 Beechcraft Bonanza 35. Chartered from Dwyer Flying Service to fly from Clear Lake, Iowa to Moorhead, Minnesota. Crashed about 5 minutes after takeoff. So, a sad day. But one that I think we had to mention because everyone, you know, talks about that or knows about it. Maybe just
there was a song written about it.
Don McLean.
Yeah.
American Pie.
Bye, Mr.
Mister? Mr. We changed, like, have a gender change on us.
Mr. What, Miss. No. Miss American Pie?
Yeah. She drove my Chevy to the levee, but the levee was dry.
Yep, exactly. Well, that tells you how much I know about it.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. But you know what? Real quick, I did want to make a positive one. 1934, Lufthansa launches the first regular transatlantic airmail service flying between Berlin and Rio de Janeiro. Ooh. In 1934 on this day. So that's
very cool.
That's a little bit more positive.
Very cool. Hey, we just got a tweet in saying that the power's back on, the 49ers are losing.
Well, they were losing before. If you're watching the football game, you might as well turn down the sound, listen to us, because it's going to be a lot more interesting than what's happening at the Super Bowl.
Exactly. The Super Bowl happens every year.
Yeah, we happen every Sunday.
Exactly.
Exactly.
And that's it.
Absolutely.
And that, for those of you who wanted another sip, exactly.
Exactly.
Yeah, but no, I think it's I think it's really good, and so what was Lufthansa? That's do you know where they're their home bases or their home airport? What's that?
Is it Lufthansa? Is it Stockholm?
Stockholm. So if anybody knows what Lufthansa's home base airport is, tweet it in, hashtag it's Simple Flight, and you'll be able to we'll be able to announce it on the air here.
We just gave the guy for the Fahrenheit, what, $400,000 or something?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, something like
there
that.
It is. Man. So now, I think I've got it. I think I know what it is, but we'll see if, the folks on Twitter know.
Yeah.
And all
it's
that.
It's kind of like our phone a friend.
Yeah. I've caught myself with that one.
With that?
I was going to say exactly again.
Yes. Exactly. I'll keep track of it.
Yeah. Yeah. So.
So what do we got for tonight's show?
We've got a great show lined up this evening.
No way. Really?
Way.
Way.
Wait, it's Simple Flight Radio. We have a great show every week, it's a lot of fun. This week we have Miss Amelia Earhart from Denver, Colorado, coming on the show.
I have told people that all week, and they, especially my non-aviator friends, I do have a few, they're like, what? What do you mean? I don't get it. And they think it's a joke. So it'll be interesting to talk to the current Amelia Earhart, as I'm sure she gets asked and told lots of weird things on a daily basis. And I've always been one that says, well, I don't want to be the same bother that everyone else is in your life. But tonight, I guess we're going to fail on that because we'll probably ask a lot of the questions she's already answered.
Right. Sure.
But hey, just not for our listenership.
No. But, I think she's doing some really cool stuff in aviation. We just got a tweet in, from Lufthansa's, headquarters that is Chicago or Frankfurt. So anyway, let's see, we've got Miss Amelia Earhart calling in. Let's get her on the line.
Okay. Is she Hello? There?
Amelia.
Hi.
Hey, how's it going?
I'm good. How are you guys?
All right. Outstanding. There we go.
We have to start off with an apology, I think, Alan. We should tell all of our listeners Amelia's being such a good sport about this, sport being the operative word.
Yeah.
Because she's at a Super Bowl party.
Hey, Technically, I'm in the basement of a Super Bowl party.
Hey, that's you're a true Av geek at heart. That's great.
Exactly. But now, oh, I said exactly now. We had a little running gag before we got you on about the word exactly, so you may hear us comment on that a few times. But so we understood that the light guy at the Super Bowl left so he could come and listen to the show, that he turned off the lights. So is that still going on?
I heard that was a rumor. I think it's probably true.
Yeah. Because all of a sudden, we just went to like 5 million people listening to the show.
Yeah, that's nice.
I think Beyonce is one of those people.
Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah, well, I called her before the show on her cell phone and said she told me she'd make it.
Yeah, yeah.
As long as she wasn't in the middle of lip-syncing something.
Oh.
Wow, too soon.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Too soon.
I'm on a roll.
Hey, I saw you lip-syncing Donka Shane a couple weeks ago, so.
Does Amelia know about that? Probably not.
I don't know.
I don't.
Yeah, we did a little lip-sync to Donka Shane, and we put it out on the internet of us singing, so. A thank you to our audience. So we have a little bit of fun here from time to time. But speaking of that, so Amelia Earhart, I mean, I was just saying how I talk to a lot of my friends, especially non-aviators. They think I'm BSing them. Who has the name Amelia Earhart?
So, Amelia Earhart does.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Well, that is the story of my life. Every single day since probably the age of 18 when I started going by Amelia, because when I was a kid, you know, my parents named me after Amelia Earhart, obviously. My family's distantly related. We share a common ancestry trace back to the 1700s, so essentially I'm a namesake of hers. But I just got teased so much in school that when I was probably about 5 or 6 all the way through until I was 18, I went by Amy because it was just easier. It eliminated a lot of the questions. And when I was 18 years old, I was on the debate team. I just decided, I was like, you know what? Cool to have a different name. Well, you know, an interesting name with a story. So I switched over, started going by Amelia. And every single day, there's at least, you know, 3 or 4 times where I have to explain it. But here in Denver, I work at the local NBC affiliate as a traffic reporter, a weather forecaster, and a part-time news anchor. And so people now associate Amelia Earhart with that. So I'm very lucky to have that recognition.
Yeah, now, that's great.
That is great. So has it been a burden? It sounds like it was up till 18. Is there certain expectations on you because of your name that now you have to live up to whether you like it or not?
Yeah, I think it was a burden. Only before I understood the importance and the power behind having a name that people remember. And, you know, when you're in your teens, you don't want to be different at all. You want to be just like everyone else. You don't want to stand out until you realize the quality behind stepping out just a bit and creating your own mark and what that means going forward. And as soon as I recognized that, it took me a lot of places. I was Amelia Earhart all the way through college and, you know, into my first few jobs, it really set me apart from the pack, because you don't forget that you met Amelia Earhart. And now that I'm a pilot, I think it sealed it up even more.
That's pretty cool.
As a good memory, you know, a memory device. So I'm very lucky.
Yeah, actually, I was thinking about that so much that I think tomorrow I'm changing my name to Amelia Earhart.
You may want to charge something. You should change to something else. Go for George Washington, something else.
There you go. Was he a pilot? It has to be a pilot if it has something to do with me.
Yeah, or chopping down a cherry tree and all that or something. Who knows? But yeah. Exactly.
Let's not go down that path.
Yeah, right. That's too much American history for me.
So you said you're a pilot now, and did the love for your background, if you will, your heritage, or the love for aviation, which came about at what point in time, and which drove the other, if you will?
Well, it's a funny story because When you're a little kid, anything that your parents push you towards, you're probably going to run from it, right?
Right,
parents
right.
Push you to get into, say, tennis or any kind of sport or function. You kind of go, I want to do my own thing. So my parents, when I was younger, never said a thing about aviation. They taught me a lot about Amelia Earhart and who she was, but they never said, you should be a pilot or you ought to try a flight lesson. So I think that in the end, they actually did the right thing. I found aviation on my own in college. I was about, I'd say 21 when I started flying. And honestly, I got so sick and tired of every single day. I would meet new people.
Yeah.
Okay, this is my friend Amelia Earhart. And the first question I asked was, oh my gosh, your name's Amelia Earhart. Are you a pilot? I would get these incredibly disappointed looks over and over and over again. And I finally got so sick of it. I said, you know what? I got to figure out if I like anything about aviation. You know, my parents unfortunately couldn't contribute anything to my college education. So they certainly couldn't contribute to flight lessons because we grew up, you know, I grew up very simply, very, very basic childhood. There was no extra.
Right.
So I got a couple of jobs in college and I was working as a waitress and I was working at golf courses and, you know, doing all sorts of things to get some extra cash. And I finally saved up enough to take that first Discovery flight and I took it in Boulder, Colorado and flew up over the Flatirons and I had this crotchety old cranky instructor and it was a dirty old 172. And I got in that plane and suddenly when we took off, it didn't matter who was sitting next to me. It didn't matter what kind of airplane we were in. It mattered that I was flying. I had taken flight and I've never looked back since. And I think that's how it happens for most of us. You know, you have that one lesson where something just clicks. So the Amelia Earhart thing is almost a non-issue at this point. And I know it's hard to separate from an outsider's perspective because you hear that Amelia Earhart is flying planes. She's a woman. It's an interesting story. But for me, I'm just myself trying to fly as much as possible and now do some things that are more connected to Amelia. But it's really just because the interest that it gains and especially the interest in kids. The young women that I talk to, I do a lot of public speaking at schools and different organizations around town. And these girls come up to me and luckily I'm still young enough and I resemble them in enough ways to where they look at me, they connect and they say, wow, if she can do it, I can do it. And I'm really hoping to bring a lot more people out to the airport and show them that it's not just a man's world and somebody who looks like me and, you know, is young, it can go out there and do exactly what they want.
That's really neat. I think there's a lot of things that you can connect on. So I've got to ask, for paying for your license yourself, that's a pretty big task. I mean, that's, you know, making enough money to especially in college. I kind of have a similar path where I paid in high school. I was working for my dad and saved up all my money and ended up my junior year, in between junior and senior year, going out and getting my license. And there's something about that, you know, having that, I don't know, there's something special about right. that your license means so much more to you, when you pay for it yourself. And especially at a young age, working hard, you kind of realize all the hard work in aviation. That's pretty cool. That's gotta
yeah,
be.
Yeah. I totally and completely agree. I think a lot of us, most of us who have tried to learn how to fly, you know, you either jump online or you call around and you look up scholarships. How can I get a scholarship or some sort of money to fly? You know, those are really hard to come by. So when it comes right down to it and you realize that you love flying more than you love a lack of hard work, when that starts to balance out and you say the hard work that you put into these extra jobs and, you know, you're busting your butt trying to get in there and just make enough to take that one flight lesson, when you realize the value, you know, it changes things. It makes yeah. going to work not so bad because the benefit is getting up in the air.
Yeah.
And when you set a real goal like that and you break it down into hours and, you know, check rides, and if I get this far, then I have a license and I'm now a pilot and I get put in this different category. I don't know. Goals for me are huge. And I think there's a lot of psychology behind that. But, yeah, when you're working for it yourself, I think it puts you in a different class.
Absolutely. Yeah.
You know, you talk about the goals and everything, and Al and I have been reading your blogs at flywithamelia.wordpress.com, and it gets pretty, I don't know if we'd say wax poetic or something like that, but I mean, between...
It's cool.
Oh, it's very cool.
I like it. You have
close
great,
the integrity gap
yeah.
and 99%.
Did you hit your marks?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I found it pretty inspirational, and I'm sure the other people that are reading it are also feeling the exact same thing. When did that start? When did you kind of make that connection that you could really motivate people?
honestly, I had no idea I could ever talk like that or write like that or think like that. But just over a year ago, I was sitting in my apartment, and at one point I lived downtown Denver in a high rise, 40 floors up, and I'm sitting out on my balcony with my dog next to me, and I'm out there with my laptop, and I'm looking around and I'm thinking, I gotta get flying again. Like, something is missing in my life. And I hadn't taken a flight lesson in a while just because I was, you know, putting my money towards other things. I'm in meteorology school right now and still paying off college loans, to be honest. And as a young professional, you know, flying isn't even realistic. Even if you do have a great job, I mean, working for a TV station, you would think that it would be easier, but it's still just like everybody else. Expenses come from all areas. So I was sitting out there. And there were a couple airplanes buzzing around, and something just hit me, and I thought, you know what? I'm going to start writing about it. If I can't do it,
cool.
And I can't get out there physically in the plane, I can start a free blog. I can see if anybody out there on my Facebook page or my Twitter page wants to read it. And it turns out a lot of people wanted to read it, and it's been awesome. We've had over 200,000 unique visitors now.
Oh, dang, that's awesome.
In the words of Will Ferrell, she's kind of a big deal.
Huge Germany.
Yeah, right.
No, the cool thing is, and I put a disclaimer out there. I said, this blog is going to be 100% transparent. It's not always going to be pretty. I'm going to talk about the hard stuff. I'm going to probably annoy a lot of people with my positive attitude. And
I don't think that's the way it works. I think it wouldn't piss anybody off
to have a positive
attitude, would it? Why would it upset someone that you have a positive attitude?
Oh, you would be surprised. It's I think when you're out there trying to encourage people, there are always the naysayers that they don't want to hear it, you know. And for those types who have written to me, gosh, dozens and dozens of times, I read their comments. They're really hurt for a second, and then I toss them out the window. And now, honestly, now that I'm in the position to fly, I go out there and fly the airplane. And it's kind of a silent form of, you know, take that.
Yeah, yeah, right. Absolutely. I'm with you on that.
Yeah.
So what are you flying?
So right now, I am happy to say that I'm back in the Cirrus. And right now, I'm flying the SR-20, but it's a Perspective.
Nice.
So it's fantastic, and I'm loving every minute of it. And I've got all my hours done towards my instrument rating, and I'm just about to take the check ride. And so it's about ready to wrap up here in just a little bit, thank goodness, because I've put a lot of time and energy into it. And the last six times I've tried to go flying, the winds have kept me down. So I'm a little frustrated with that, but I'm almost done.
Wow.
Very cool. Yeah. So like maybe in the next 30 days or so, next month?
Yeah. Then? Oh, absolutely, within the next 30 days.
Very
cool.
Good.
Well, congratulations.
Mark my words.
That's
you got it.
Will you hit your marks?
Yes, there you go. Absolutely. Close the integrity gap.
Yeah.
All that.
Yeah. No, that's pretty cool. Well, I just got back from the factory at Duluth and that was my first time operating a Perspective airplane. Those things are really, really slick. It's so integrated. It's so, it makes the airplane so smart. And so I got to ask, do you fly with the highway and the sky on or off?
I go back and forth. For instrument training, I think it's a good safety tool, so I have been flying with it on. But you know what? I think turning it on and off and not getting too reliant on those options is really important.
Oh, very much so. Go back to the old school ways. I like it.
Yeah, as old school as you can get in a Cirrus.
I mean, right.
They are really spoiled.
Yeah.
That's when you cover up everything and just look out the window. That's the only thing you can do in a Cirrus.
Yeah, right, exactly. Right. So, where have your IFR cross countries been to? Have you done any really good ones that you particularly enjoyed?
Have you guys been to Colorado before?
Yeah.
Yeah, this guy over here flies a King Air, and he goes to a lot of places.
Yeah,
nice.
It's a Centennial, I think it was, Centennial a week ago. Which is good.
Well, as you guys know then, Centennial is a huge airport, and at one point it was ranked the third largest general aviation airport in the world. So super busy, tons of traffic, you know, you're out there with the big guys, and when you're tooling around in a little plane like that, you get a lot of really good experience on the radios, communicating with controllers who are very busy, and they don't have time to put up with you, you know, asking to get your clearance again. So flying out of Centennial, we've been going to Colorado Springs a lot, which also proves to be an interesting challenge with the Air Force Academy,
nice.
Tucked up into the hills there. Often we'll go to Pueblo because they've got the lovely DME arc that I can practice with. but in Cirrus, it's really easy because you just load it into the GPS and, but you'll be happy to hear that I have been using my VORs to actually, you know, find my waypoints. And so we're going old school as much as we can.
That's what I like.
Tune 10, turn 10. Remember those DME arcs?
Exactly.
Tune 10, turn 10.
Go back to the old school.
So, you know, going back to the connection with Amelia, now last year you took a flight transcontinental. Was it just last year, right?
Yeah, it was December 2011. And I woke up, and it all came from the blog. I decided to start writing about some goals that I had along with that, with getting back into my flight training. And, you know, once I was a private pilot, I thought obviously the next step would be instrument. And I got this crazy idea one morning. It was Saturday, and I get up every morning at about 3:30 for my day job. So on Saturday, sleeping in until 5 is kind of a big deal. So I sprung up out of bed and I grabbed my laptop and I just like banged out this blog that was like, you know what? I gotta do something big. I need a goal. I need a flight to get up to. So I decided, not randomly, but I picked a flight that Amelia had done that was manageable, being a private pilot, wouldn't be too expensive, and would keep me in the U.S. just to simplify things. So I thought, well, her last flight, her round-the-world flight, started in Oakland. She basically made a trek across, she went Oakland, Burbank, Tucson, Austin, New Orleans, Miami, before she went and continued around the world. So I thought, well, let's finish her last transcontinental flight before she disappeared. So that was the route, and I was lucky enough to borrow a Cirrus from somebody who donated the time to me, and then and FlightCam, who you know makes those awesome cameras that you can have things. They were a sponsor of that flight, and basically took a few days, recreated it, and then also recreated an awesome picture, which you guys may have seen of Amelia flying over Treasure Island in Oakland. And have you guys seen the picture?
Yeah.
Yeah, the cool thing was, and it's on the blog, we also, I'll brag a minute here, we got the cover of Plane and Pilot magazine for that flight.
Oh, cool.
And it was the flight training issue, which goes out to all schools across the U.S. and ends up in, like, the counselor's office, so kids who want to get into flying can read it. But that picture made it in there with my photo and then the picture of Amelia Earhart back in 1937. And it was something magical happened up there, you know, when I was flying in that airspace, because I was just explaining this to a really good friend the other day that it wasn't that I was just in the same location on the ground that Amelia had stood, but I was in this three-dimensional space where Amelia had flown. And that to me really solidified the feeling that I get from these flights and these goals that I set. And so obviously, you know, after a transcontinental flight, what's next? You want to do something bigger. So I've got some bigger plans, which I think you guys know about.
And can you share those with our audience?
Yeah, definitely. So having this name, the second most obvious question after are you a pilot was, are you going to fly around the world? And the confidence from getting my pilot's license, from becoming a meteorologist, from working as a TV anchor, you know, all of these things have culminated into the belief that I, as a pilot, can get through the training, can put in the hours, and can eventually make a flight around the world. And I'm very, very happy to say that we're making some serious progress towards that, and it looks like it's going to happen in June or July of 2014.
Wow.
That's exciting.
That is really exciting.
I just want to know, how do I sneak in the back and get in the luggage area or something?
Yeah.
I question a lot. Had a lot of volunteers for trail planes, so.
Yeah.
How many people will be in the plane with you? Would it be just yourself, or will you have someone go with you?
I will have a co-pilot with me.
Nice.
Very nice.
Well, I'd like to apply for that job.
Yeah. Well, that's
how many efforts you got.
That's actually really cool. I think that's you know, pushing your aviation boundaries and limits and comfort zone. Not you feel pretty comfortable flying around the world, but in, you know, in an airplane. But there's so much more going on in that, and I don't know. That's something that I really appreciate and, you know, kind of admire, because hey, you know, a good pilot's always getting better, and you know, why not fly around the world? Because that's really, really cool.
Yeah, it's cool because it takes your level of questioning your flight ability to this different place. I mean, you're thinking about the political implications of landing in certain countries. Mm-hmm. You're thinking about fuel supply and, you know, how you pay for these things, how you plan ahead. You've got your overflight permits. You've got your communication issues with even just speaking with somebody as you're flying through Africa. I mean, what is that going to be like?
Right.
And when you think about these types of situations, you know, you really have to break it down to is it possible? The answer there is yes. And then how do you do it most effectively? How do you build the right team of people to help you do it? And how do you gain experience from people who have done it in the past? And luckily, I've got an awesome team coming together that the smartest people I know. And I don't know. I know you guys can see me on camera right now because we're doing this as a Skype interview, but I get so happy. The smile that comes across my face when I think about this coming together is unreal.
Yeah, well, you can see us too, and I don't. Maybe my microphone is coming, but I haven't stopped smiling since we got on the phone.
Yeah. No, this is a
we love aviation, don't
yeah,
we?
Yeah, absolutely. No, that's cool. Yeah. So no, I think that's you know, have a goal like that to really put a smile on your face, and you know, I just think about the three-dimensional effect that you were talking about while you're actually completing this flight. I know it's interesting. It's I'm glad you brought that up because there's something cool with that. You know, there was a I've done a couple flights that last year that kind of you get that 3D feeling of whoa, this is what somebody saw, this is what somebody you know experienced or whatnot. And one of them was going up the Hudson River. I rented a Piper Arrow and flew up the Hudson River, and you know it was all of a sudden 9/11 started actually you know flashing in my mind, but it was in a good way. You know, because I was like, wow, there's a lot of memories in this little piece of airspace, and you know, kind of be flooded by all of them. It's something powerful. It makes that it's the stuff that you can't put in your logbook that makes it really, really cool.
Right.
So,
right.
Yeah. No, that should be really, really exciting. So, but there's also you said a charitable side of the flights.
Yes. And that's. When I really think about why am I doing it, you know, sure, it's going to be fun to make a flight around the world, but it'll be done in the blink of an eye. So as a responsible pilot and as a responsible person, I think, who wants to lead a good example, I know that it's got to become bigger than that. And it's got to lead on, or it's got to continue on longer than just the actual flight. So right now in Denver, I work with Wings Over the Rockies Air and Space Museum.
Wow.
And I'm called the Ambassador to Youth. It's a very fancy title for saying that I get to build rockets with kids sitting on the museum floor.
That sounds like a riot.
Yeah. When I one day built so many rockets that I had a blister on the end of my thumb from snapping the pieces together, and I've had a lot of balsa wood splinters from building those little planes. But basically, we invite thousands and thousands of kids every year into that museum for field trips. You know, they come and check out all the fighters, and they come out and check out the amazing aircraft that we've got out there. And it's a huge facility, and it's in an old hangar. So luckily I've teamed up with Wings Over the Rockies to do these programs in the meantime. And it looks like going forward, we are going to be able to put a couple kids through flight school just at a very small level in the beginning. But what I hope to turn it into is a whole educational plan that gets every grade level engaged in actively watching a flight as it happens. And the Around the World flight is going to be, and the website for that is coming together so nicely to where I'm really hoping for the capability to have satellite video phone on the flight and for the entire flight.
Oh, wow.
Kids and adults, I should say, log on and literally just watch what the cockpit looks like, you know, cruising over the ocean, heading towards Africa. You know, you look in and you're thinking, you're really a part of it. And,
yeah.
And what really inspired me was recently watching Felix Baumgartner's jump from space. I mean, it was crazy.
I got really nervous for the guy. Yeah. You know,
he's waiting for the guy's blood to boil.
Yeah.
I remember I went to breakfast that morning and I had my iPad and my iPhone with both streaming video, so that I wouldn't miss any part of this jump, and watching him go through his checklists and do everything so methodically. And it was just magical. I mean, it lit me up. And I had so many ideas from the way that they executed that whole operation from, you know, their command center to all the communication leading up to it, the meteorological research that they did, and just all the pieces that came together. I thought, this is a really good plan, almost like a business plan for my flight around the world. So I've been in contact with some folks who worked on their team, and it's just such a good example. It truly does. That's a perfect example that anything is possible. If you can go up there and do that and come out just fine.
Yeah, seriously.
That's really easy.
Yeah.
You know, what's interesting that I think of, and I didn't invent this, but the terminology learn, earn, and return, kind of the three phases of life. You're getting into the return piece at a very young age.
Yeah. I know about how long. I just turned 30, but yeah, I mean, there's so much learning, though, that really it won't ever stop. I've got so much training to do in the next year and a half of my life, and just to think of, you know, being a private pilot, it opens up a lot of doors, but it doesn't mean that you're ready to do anything big. And what I've learned in aviation and really with anything is you've got to learn from people who have done it before and who have a lot more hours than you and who've been stuck in dangerous situations and made it through. So luckily I've got a great co-pilot who's got thousands of hours and has a lot of experience to share. So when I think about continued learning, that's what I talk to. And when I go and talk to kids about these flights, it's like, as an adult, you can't ever stop expanding your mind. And as cliche as that sounds, I know that firsthand as somebody who, you know, works a full-time job and comes home, does, you know, basically calculus and crazy homework for these meteorology courses, and then just flies. I mean, I've never felt more just intelligent and connected than I do at this point in my life, and I cannot slow down. That's the thing, and I don't think it's to a dangerous level. I get that criticism a lot on the blog. It's like, slow down, you're going to burn out. But what I find is that the challenges that are presented to you and the things that you allow yourself to do, I think you can always handle what's thrown at you.
Yeah, yeah.
If you can't, you wouldn't be coming back for more. You'd give up, and then people wouldn't expect those things from you. So I like that I'm challenged in a lot of different directions. I was telling you guys before, I'm doing this thing for work right now. I'm a vegan for the next 7 days. And let me tell you, that's a lot harder than flying an airplane.
Give me a little insight. What causes a person to become a vegan for a little time, not like forever?
Well, right now my job, so my paycheck, I suppose. We're doing a segment basically based around the concept of I'll try anything once. And so we're bringing in nutritionists and specialists about what it's like to lead a vegan lifestyle. And I did draw the line when they told me they did not want me to carry my purse because it was leather. So.
Oh, man.
No, I think it's you just can't eat your purse.
Yeah, exactly.
But you told us something interesting. What is a very good vegan food?
Oreos.
Oreos, yes.
Yeah, it turns out Oreos are accidentally vegan. And
accidentally vegan.
I haven't eaten much in the past few days, so if I'm a little delirious, that would be why. And I'm at a Super Bowl party right now, and everybody upstairs is eating, you know, artichoke dip and just delicious things like that.
Yeah, we're protecting you from all the spicy meatballs they're eating and things like that. You're downstairs. You don't have to see that.
Yeah. Your help a lot.
Well, there is that's really neat to be able to give back to youth and aviation and also to aspire to turn, you know, your aviation goals and into somebody else's aviation goals in their own way. And that's something that's really, really cool. And I don't think a lot of people are, let me rephrase that. I do think a lot of people are thinking that way, but they're also, it's getting a, you know, people talk a lot of talk with that, but they don't do a lot of walking, you know? So to hear and have a website coming, you know, available and being able to reach out to, what was the name of the museum again?
It's Wings Over the Rockies.
Wings Over the Rockies.
Museum.
Yeah. So to be affiliated with that, I mean, that's pretty cool. And, you know, I think aviation needs more of that because, and do it in creative ways. So the space jump, that was presented in such a cool manner. It was very modern, you know?
Right. And would connect with today's youth, obviously.
Oh, big time. Big time. Think about, I was actually reminded of, you watched the Apollo landing on the moon with Walter Cronkite and everything. And that was like, what?
I mean, you're younger than she is and you're talking about
it inspired me. The whole thing was on YouTube, right? So then I'm just, you know, while that's going on in the background, I'm going on in the...
I just didn't expect to hear the words Walter Cronkite out of you tonight.
I'm an old soul.
Old soul in a 26 year old body.
Yeah, right. Exactly. But they, it was pretty funny. But that's a cool way of going about it, a very modern way, and that's kind of like the new Apollo mission-esque broadcast of flight. So that's really neat.
Well, I hope it turns out to go in that direction, because I think there's a lot of potential and there's a lot of interest there, especially with women. I mean, I'm happy that it's been difficult to become a female pilot, and I'm also really stoked to say that I have a female flight instructor right now.
Cool.
Who is awesome. And this isn't, I'm not a big like girl power, like girls have to be tough and can do anything men can do kind of girl. I'm just not that way. I mean, the fact is if you're smart, you can pull it off and it doesn't matter who you are. So the girl power thing doesn't have anything to do with it, but still having those experiences where I walk out to the airplane and I'm carrying a flight bag and a man in a truck stops and asks me if I need help or asks me if I know where I'm going, like I still get that.
Oh,
and so to be able to talk to young women and young men also and to explain that that's still happening but they have the power to control that going forward is a big deal. And the perfect example is, so working at a TV station, you get asked a lot to go and speak to schools, you know, classrooms, different organizations. And luckily, I talk about the TV side of it and the meteorology stuff, but it always leads to flying because of my name. So I'm given this huge kind of built-in audience to speak to. And I was just telling a friend this the other day. When I go into a classroom or a big group, I always start out with the same question. And I ask everybody in the room, I say, okay, so how many of you want to be a pilot? And
I'll raise my hand.
Yeah. See, that's a perfect example. None of the kids or none of the women raise their hand. There's always like the dorky guy in the back who's like,
oh, geez. Oh yeah. Yeah. That's me. That's me.
So, but I go through my presentation. I show video clips from my F-16 flight. That's right.
Nice.
Oh, now I'm really jealous.
F-16. You know, show videos from flying in the Cirrus and talk about the transcontinental flight and the potential for around the world flight and just the feelings that aviation brings up in me. After I get through, say, an hour of chatting with these people, I then ask, okay, so now how many of you want to be a pilot? And everybody's hand just shoots up.
Cool.
Because when you show somebody your passion really freely and openly, I think it opens doors to allow those feelings to come out in them. And even if it doesn't translate directly into aviation or something that I talked about in my presentation, it's just that they're getting excited about something, anything. Because that's the key. As long as you wake up and you know that you want to get going on that one thing that just fires you up, I think that's what it's all about.
Yeah. You'd make a good flight instructor. Absolutely. Just because of that's like the most misunderstood responsibility of a flight instructor, and that is pulling the passion of flight out of an individual. So that's cool that you could walk into, you've got that ability to walk into a room, share everything, and you know, and in a cool way that it's intriguing and engaging, and you know, have a whole room full of people say, oh yeah, I'm going to be a pilot at the end of it. You'd make a good instructor.
Well, thank you. I've thought a little bit about it. It makes me nervous to, I mean, I'm such an ongoing student that I feel really far away from being able to teach somebody just because I'm still soaking so much up every time I get in that plane. And with something as complex as the Cirrus and then, you know, the next couple planes I want to move into, there's a lot to learn. And that's a lot of responsibility. But the people who have instructed me, I mean, I have so much gratitude for them, and there have been a few that really have that passion, and that's when And I know you guys have felt this as pilots, you know, like sometimes you've got a lesson scheduled and you just don't want to fly because it's not fun. There's no passion in the cockpit. Yeah. Like, oh, I'm going to go practice a little bit. But when you're with the right person and you're on a good learning curve and you're moving forward, it's like, it's effortless to go out there and fly.
And same for the instructor.
Yeah.
And he's the same way. He's talked about instructors that say, it's too windy. Not Al. Al says, we have an opportunity to go fly. Let's take advantage of this wonderful opportunity.
Right, right. I mean, perfect example, just last week, our gusts were too big, so we couldn't go up and do our approaches. So we just sat there and did 2.5 hours of ground school. And, you know, the next day it was snowing, so we plugged the plane in, we sat in there and just went through every aspect of that perspective. And, you know, I knew it all. But it can't hurt to practice on the ground because it's going to make you so much safer when you're up there in the air.
Or you could be with Al and you can actually get on the tarmac and put your arms out like an airplane and do holds.
Yeah.
True story.
Yeah. The citation that just rolls up and pushes it out of the way.
What the hell are you guys doing out there?
Yeah. We're practicing. We're learning holds. What does it look like, you know? Yeah. No. So that's really neat. So to be able to show the passion and really bring it out in people, that's really important. When you first came on, like in the first 5 minutes of the show here, remember, and I think you almost used the words verbatim, but bringing people in on the other side of the fence. Does that sound familiar, Mark?
That sounds like something I've written about many times.
Yeah, exactly. So that's really cool to be able to, Mark and I are very big, aficionados, I guess, of trying to reach out to the people outside of that are looking in on the other side of the fence, and those gaps are slowly closing up. Yeah.
They have the spark, but they've had no way to execute on that, and we're trying to find them. And it's so cool to talk to you because you're doing the exact same thing. Then,
yeah, yes,
I'm trying. It's fun. People, luckily, I'm in a really public view every day, being on TV every morning and for several hours, probably like 6 hours total. You know, and then I get to go out in the community, and if I'm doing a school visit or if I'm even just out at a coffee shop, you know, people say all the time, they're like, where do you get all your energy from and how do you keep up with all these things that you're into? And honestly, it's because I'm just so happy. It's when you have a goal and you're consistently looking forward towards achieving it and asking the right questions and asking people for help, it's like that constant pursuit really – really drives me personally. And I was writing about this in my last blog that I posted last week. I was saying that it's an individual decision each and every day to get excited about what you're doing and what kind of goals you're working towards. And every morning when I drive into work, you know, it's super early, it's dark outside, the whole city is sleeping. And I always say that I've got 14 minutes to set my day up exactly how I want it to look. And it's not like thinking about my to-do list or what I have to accomplish by the end of the day. It's like, how does this day want to feel? And how do I want to make it just rock in the best way possible and come out of it feeling just a little bit smarter and more well accomplished and closer to those goals than when I left yesterday? And as corny as that may sound, it's working. And I'm filled with just this great energy all the time. And, I feel lucky, so I want to share it with those people that have any slight interest. And so social media has played a huge role in all of this. And my Facebook and Twitter pages, whenever I post something about aviation, I mean, they just go through the roof. Like, there's so much interest from people that have had no experience with airplanes. They've never even been out to a small airport. And they're commenting, and they're asking questions, and they're liking things, and they're sharing it. So I think the interest is there. But it has to come in the right form. And I think from a young, enthusiastic woman, I think it's a form that it doesn't always get packaged in. So I want to exploit that. You know, I want to take advantage of the fact that I've got a lot of fun stuff going on. And if people are willing to pay attention because of any of those reasons, I'll go for it and I'll use it to kind of sneak in there because I'm getting interest from all corners of the world.
Yeah. No, that's really cool. On some of your Twitter posts and everything, you use the hashtag gulping beauty. And that was a picture I think you took, of a sunset, I believe it was it was a sunset with the clouds and everything. And it was pretty cool. And then, I think I, I might
is that this one right here?
I don't know if that was it or not, but I think there was a wing in it or something. But okay. I think that's a cool thing to use, and that'd be a fun hashtag to start, throwing out there, and hashtagging cool airplane shots from the air with gulping beauty. There's so many different instances, and I think it'd be, if we get this thing really roaring, it would be it'd be a lot of fun to see to experience, even for us who may have not necessarily fly all over the place, but to see different parts of the world or different if you fly in the Midwest, to see pictures of the mountains and stuff like that. That's a neat way to share and interact and show people the things that you miss on the ground.
Right. And the whole gulping beauty thing came from an Amelia Earhart quote. She was flying over somewhere, and I don't remember it verbatim, and it's one of the more obscure quotes by her, but she said, "I looked out the window and I realized that I was gulping beauty." And that one just stuck with me, and she really had a way about her of speaking about what she saw and felt when she was in the air. And that was one of the best. And I consider myself to be kind of a wordsmith. So when I heard that, I thought, that's different. And it's super catchy. So yeah, I think you're right. I'll start using that hashtag more often.
Yeah, there you go. Absolutely.
You talk about bringing the young folk in. I think there's a lot of people that had this spark. And now I'm talking more my generation that have missed out and don't think that they can achieve it. And to your point about you can do anything, actually, I think of my great uncle who unfortunately passed away after 106 years, but he had two.
Whoa.
Two, yeah, wow. And only wow. Because he fell. He was smarter than all of us in this room, even at that point. He was a scientist, but he had two. And by the way, he was a vegetarian, not a vegan, but he was a vegetarian. Uh-huh. But he said, take the tea off. This is what he told kids. Take the tea off of can't. Right, so you can do anything.
Yeah.
And to your point you made earlier, it was keep learning. Take the tea off a can and keep learning and eat right.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
The things you can accomplish, and we don't have time for it, nor is it relevant, but all the things that he accomplished in his life we're very proud of, and it was just because of those simple philosophies.
Yeah, yeah. Well, hey, I want to throw this out there for our listeners real quick for if there's the Twitter challenge of the gulping beauty hashtag. If anybody out there listening right now, which we actually have had a bunch of questions come in and all that, for anybody out there that has a cool flying picture, post it on Twitter and hashtag it with gulping beauty, and we'll post it here through our Twitter feed and all that, and we'll get it. We'll start it right now. Why not?
There you go.
Yeah.
I like it.
Yeah.
So, Amelia, do you have a favorite airplane or dream air? Maybe I should do that, a dream airplane. So maybe even one you haven't flown yet that you would like to fly?
Yes, I do. Luckily, I was able to check off the F-16 from the list.
It's just not fair. It's just not fair.
I'm a little bit there. I got my incentive flight out of Buckley Air Force Base a couple of years back, and had a full hour. I was in heaven.
Holy cow.
How many G's did you pull?
Pulled 9 G's twice. Did not vomit.
Whoa.
And did you pass out?
No.
Cool. No, are you serious?
No. I've been doing some aerobatic training recently too, so I've been flying the Extra 330, which is just a killer airplane. I went out to the Reno Air Races this year and to meet those folks and to meet a lot of the people in the aviation world that, go to Reno, go to Oshkosh. I mean, it's just ridiculous. I met Kirby recently at an air show here in Colorado. So, dream airplanes, I would say, if it were ever a possibility, I would love a chance to fly in a Lockheed Electra, obviously, Amelia's plane.
Yes.
And I know that there is still one flying. There's one that's going through a lot of maintenance right now, so I'm not sure if it'll fly again. And I get that question a lot, why don't you fly around the world in the Lockheed Electra? And, in the true nature and spirit of Amelia Earhart, I think you should fly the safest and most well-equipped aircraft out there, and that wouldn't be the right choice. but, I've got a lot of planes I want to learn how to fly. Right now, I'm stoked on the Cirrus because it's smart and it's safe, and it's a good advanced training plane. I don't know if it's the right plane to get into if you're going to start from day one training because it is hard, and I think everybody should learn in something real basic. I mean, I got my private in a 172, and then transitioned up to the Cirrus. So I'm not some Cirrus snob that's been in there the whole time. But I like a lot of the older stuff too. I'd love to have a Super Cub someday and maybe, you know, do some building in my garage if I can ever land a house on it, on an airstrip. And, so yeah, I'm rambling here. So
no, not at all.
Airplanes all night.
Yeah. Hey, that's actually a tweet came in, and somebody was asking, "Have you ever been in or flown a King Air?"
I have not, actually.
You'll have to come to Chicago. I know a guy that can do it for you.
Nice. Yeah. No, that's a gorgeous, gorgeous aircraft. And it's one of those where, so on top of the flying the airplane stuff, part of the news job that I've had is flying in helicopters and covering breaking news and high-speed chases and everything. So I spent a lot of time at Van Nuys Airport out in L.A., Whiteman Airport, here in Colorado, Rocky Mountain Metro, and Centennial. And so it seemed like wherever we landed the helicopter, there were always a lot of King Airs around, and I was kind of that dorky kid, like, leaning up against the side, looking in, like, oh, my God.
I resemble that remark.
Yeah. That's where all you got those marks on your head there, Mark.
I know. I've always been a forehead against the window kind of guy.
Yeah, right.
But another fun note about the aviation side of working for NBC and CBS is that I have 4,000 hours in an A-Star.
Nice.
Yeah. Flying as a passenger, actually, running the big cameras, the Cineflex camera, the big gyro-mounted ball front. And, 4,000 hours. You think, if I could have 4,000 hours in an airplane, I mean, I wish I would have been in control as pilot in command, but I'll take what I can get. And it just made me so much more comfortable up in the air. And I did a lot of my flight training in airplanes in Los Angeles and also being in helicopters out there. And I think challenging yourself with that really busy airspace is so valuable, but I learned a ton doing that. And actually, my first solo cross country for my private was leaving Van Nuys, going to San Bernardino, and coming back to Fox Field. So you can imagine the traffic that was up there. It was crazy. You get handed
intense.
Off, you know, every 5 minutes.
Yeah. Oh, that's pretty cool. You know, it's fun. I did I still fill in every once in a while for, I'm a pilot for the news talk radio and, here in Chicago, WBBM, but it's funny because, we're interacting with the news helicopters all the time and, you know, we're kind of doing the breaking news stuff and, finding the accidents and things like that. And I don't know, it's fun. It's gotta be, it's fun. It sounds like it's fun as a reporter. And then, it certainly is a pilot. You know, doing that here in Chicago and kind of pushing the limits of the airspace. That's a cool thing. Oh, yeah. I'm glad you brought that up because, you know, circling around O'Hare and, the surface ring starts at 6 miles and you're at 6.03 miles from the surface, you know, away from O'Hare. It's like you're really, really, pushing it. It's almost like you can tell which house it has. You know, that's where the surface
that's in the
rings.
Bravo is, yeah.
It's where the cutoff is.
And then he takes us downtown and it's like, okay, we've got to be within 2,000 feet of the Sears Tower. Okay, now you can turn, you can go next to it. It opens your eyes when you see what traffic reporters and all those news helicopters.
Yeah.
Have you thought about getting your helicopter rating?
I thought about it. I've got a couple of lessons in my logbook. But the cost was just so much higher. And with helicopters, I think of short little trips and getting from place to place. When I think about airplanes, I think about journeys and I think about adventures. So helicopters are useful, but they don't hold that same romantic, you know, feeling of true aviation for me. But I absolutely respect that world. And if I had an extra $70,000, I would definitely.
Well, how about that guy that flew to Oshkosh from Germany in the helicopter? Was it last year or the year before?
Are you serious? Yeah. I didn't hear about that. That's,
Do you ever get to Oshkosh?
Oh yeah, I went last year and, I've already requested my time off to go back this year.
Very cool. And you flew in the Cirrus or something?
I had to fly in commercially last year, but I flew back with some friends in a 195, which was really fun.
Oh, cool.
And, I flew it all the way back here to Colorado and it was just a great experience. You know, just walking around, I felt like I was gulping beauty there. I mean, the airplanes that are out in the field, what is it, like 16,000 airplanes?
Yep.
And from the old stuff to the brand new technology to going and like Googling the Breitling watches. It's fantastic. And I love seeing the kids walk around with mom and dad and checking things out. And, yeah.
Yeah. That we actually have two tweets or a couple tweets coming in right now from, the gulping beauties. It's somebody just tweeted in a Friday night sunset over a Cessna 140, for Oshkosh 2012 this year.
And then, nice.
Yeah, so that's pretty cool. And this other one, it's loading, but we'll figure it out. Oh, here it is.
It comes up.
A 777, cockpit banner. That's cool. But, anyway, yeah, so, it's, really appreciate you coming on the show tonight. It's been a lot of fun having you. It's cool to hear all the passion coming out, and that's super, super important. And, we just really appreciate that.
And we took you away from a party. You're not even in your home. You're in somebody else's basement. I feel horrible, but we wanted as much time as we could with you and appreciate you taking the time to be with us here.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
You guys, I've been looking forward to this for a long time. I mean, we scheduled this quite a while ago. We didn't realize it was Super Bowl Sunday.
Yeah.
I didn't.
Yeah. Neither did we. I said, oh my God, what did we do?
Yeah, exactly. It's just Sunday night. It's just another Sunday night, for the radio show and all that. But, we hope you come back on, again and,
maybe soon after she gets her instrument ready.
Yeah, exactly. and talk about that and, some more. You got a lot of cool things going on that we'd love to hear about.
Well, thank you guys. Yeah. I feel like I'm on the cusp of a lot of really big things. And also, you know, next time we talk, I'll be able to share some really exciting details about the Round the World flight. And, you know, starting to move forward on this, I think from an outsider's perspective, when you hear somebody talk about big goals like this, I think it's important to put out there that I started out just like everybody else, you know, working as many jobs as I could. This isn't like a big pile of money was placed in front of me and it's like, here, go fly, inspire the world. It's a daily battle to have the energy and the enthusiasm and the funding to get this all done. But when you care about something this much, you start asking the really hard questions and you start asking for help. You start asking, how did you do it? Or could you contribute? And let me tell you what, that's the best and the most important lesson that I've learned through this whole thing is that people help in proportion to how they're able to help, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Perfect sense.
And you know, if somebody's able to contribute $5 towards something that you're working on, you know, they're giving because that's what they're able to. And when you start asking from bigger groups and saying, you know, listen, I've got this huge idea. Would you like to contribute? You'd be surprised at the answers you get when you're genuine and authentic and you put your heart and your soul out there and you say, this is what it's all about and I want to help other people. So that's where it's all coming from. And it's just, it's exciting. It feels good. And I really appreciate you guys taking the time to listen to my story.
Oh, our pleasure. Yeah. It's obviously very genuine. So go root on for your favorite team and good luck in your instrument ride.
Yeah.
And Thank you guys.
And we'll talk to you, I hope, very, very soon.
Yeah, absolutely.
Sounds good. And I'll go answer some of those tweets right now and I'll keep posting those pictures and keep on gulping beauty.
Cool. There you go. Thanks. All right.
Bye, Amelia.
Bye.
All right. Thanks, guys.
All right. See ya. We'll see ya. Bye-bye. So. Excellent.
Oh my goodness.
That was pretty cool.
I'm pumped.
Yeah.
I'm not making that up. I want to go out and change the world even more. You know, like I always do. But the youthful energy, although I think I've got some youthful energy.
No.
Twice her age, but that was just really cool. And she's genuine. So actually, we didn't have as much time as we normally take because truly she is at a guest's house at a party on a Super Bowl. And
if that doesn't say commitment to aviation, I don't know what does.
Especially at that age. And so her blog site is flywithamelia.wordpress.com, and you can see on January 27th about her last blog, and she has a few up there that we talked about, this idea of closing the integrity gap, so on and so forth. So I encourage you to do that, and let's keep an eye on her. I know that she's going to accomplish a lot, not only trips around the world or certain milestones, but I think she's going to accomplish a lot more than that in terms of her impact on general aviation and beyond.
Very much so. Very much so. I think that's a great example of having outstanding aviation goals and being able to, you know, think outside the box with them a little bit. I've kind of had my own in trying to really push, you know, okay, rather than break, you know, let's break the norm. You know, a private pilot with an instrument rating flying around the world, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, and, well, like she said, I mean, it wasn't like anything was handed to her. And so that means all of us have that exact same opportunity, right? It's there's no difference.
Yeah.
Except
yeah.
Alex, who was, well, no, Alex is kind of the same thing. I'm saying Alex in our listening audience says, what the heck is he talking about? Alex is in the studio tonight with us.
The familiar voice of Alex Catullus. We think he has a New Jersey accent.
And he thinks you have a Burt Reynolds laugh.
He does have a Burt Reynolds laugh. All anybody has to do is go to YouTube, Burt Reynolds, Smokey and the Bandit. And you'll find Al Waterloo there.
Yeah, exactly. It was Al before he was reincarnated in his current form.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Maybe I'd be a lot more, the bank account didn't transfer with that, but oh well.
He's broke now.
Oh.
Yeah, he is, isn't he? And he's in the hospital too, I think.
Right.
Oh, geez, I don't want anything to do with
that. He wishes he was always with Sally Field and not with Lonnie.
Oh, really? I didn't see you know much more than I do on this
Mr.
stuff.
Yeah, Mr. Burt Reynolds expert over here. Are you going to be his biographer?
It's 70s gossip. What do you want me to tell you?
Yeah, exactly. So, well, this is pretty cool.
Yeah, again, there is so much to accomplish. And one of the things that she said that actually tied in with our special announcement last week, the scholarship.
Yes.
You know, we have had some exciting news this week with regard to that. We announced on last week's radio show, you know, to echo what Amelia said, how helping somebody, right, to earn their ticket and help a dream come true. Well, we have some people that felt that why help one person? Why not plant a seed that can help a generation? And instead of funding one pilot, let's fund a flying club, because flying clubs can generate more than one pilot and can also generate it for many years. And we haven't even sent out the initial press release. And in our first week since we announced it, we have 34 applications and over 20 states represented.
20 states out of the union. I think it's actually more than that.
I think it's more than 20. It was 20 when it was 17, or when it was, somewhere in the 20s. But we have over 40% of the U.S. geography covered with requests for the Aviation Flight Club Scholarship. So how exciting is that?
That's really exciting. I can't believe it.
And the other thing is AOPA has stepped up as a partner even more so, and they're going to contribute $1,000 to the scholarship as well.
Yeah.
So the flying club that wins will not only get like David Clark headsets and $1,000 of money from AOPA and Signature Flight Support. It's going to provide 50 gallons of fuel. And we've got Sporties and Cirrus providing appearance kits for making airplanes look clean and keeping them looking shiny with that pride of ownership. I mentioned David Clark, who am I for? Schedule Master.
We'll be providing LiveATC.net.
LiveATC.net. We'll provide a scanner. Pilot Edge for training. I mean, we've got a complete kit. And then add on top of that, four of us that are going to be co-pilots or mentors, if you will, to help these clubs actually get off the ground and learn from our mistakes and what we've done right over the last 6+ years.
Right.
I just think it's absolutely the right path to go. And to Amelia's point, you know, we're doing it with a lot of passion, and I think it's going to translate.
Well, you know, it's really nice hearing stories like hers and seeing how she gives back. And very passionate. I think this is some way that you and I and, we can throw their names out there. Todd McClamrock and Lewis Bowers are very passionate. And, you know, we're trying to give back. And, you know, she said something that was important. I believe, you know, rather than just having her around the world flight be done in a blink of an eye, she wants it to be long lasting. And that's kind of like the essence of our scholarship and how it came about.
Yep.
You know, a lot of aviation scholarships out there, they give you a check for $5,000 and you go out and get your license or your instrument ticket or something like that, and that's it. I think it's great that they're out there to help pilots, but you know, it's just one person, and you never really see them or hear from them again. And, you know, this is a scholarship to build a community at an airport. And have you seen how long some of these flying clubs have been around for 70 years or
so? Absolutely. We got them at Waukegan. We have Stick and Rudder up here. Unfortunately, I understand Paragon, which was an old one at Pelwaukee / Chicago Executive, just sold their last plane. But another old one, there's we could go around the country, to your point.
Yeah.
It keeps on living.
Right, exactly. So it's neat that, you know, see how these scholarships are trying to tackle that, like Amelia's, where she's trying to tackle the youth aspect. Mm-hmm. We're trying to tackle the flying community aspect. Maybe provide a center for those young pilots to go to.
One of the things that came up in my mind when she was talking, and it actually kind of bothered me. Remember, I went to my local high school.
Yeah.
And I said, I want to talk to yours. You tell me math class, science class, after school clubs. I want to help start a flying club. And the administration just kind of poo-pooed it. So, yeah. We're not interested. And beyond the need of future jobs that are coming, this could add meaning to someone's life. And it just, I'll say the word, pisses me off that people are willing to, kind of shun that aside. No, they don't want that. They don't need that.
Yeah.
How dare they make that choice for these kids?
All right, exactly. Aviation's pretty cool. You know, I've never seen a little kid not get excited about aviation. Right. Other than if they're at the Chicago Air and Water Show and the Blue Angels buzz everybody by surprise and, everybody just, they get scared and plug their ears.
I tell you, one of the most rewarding things I do in aviation is the Young Eagle flights. And sometimes I just do ground school. And to see these teenagers come in, the parents a little nervous, I just love talking to them because they're either bubbling with excitement or a little anxiety, but after the flight, they're all the same.
Right.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, there's that's pretty exciting to get passionate. You know, if you can teach a guy like Alex Katulis how to fly or get his instrument rating, there's nothing more
fun. Yeah, it's something we should aspire to. Teach him how to fly. Yeah. Teach him to get his instrument rating.
If you can teach that guy how to fly, you can teach anybody how to fly.
Yeah, that's how it all started. When I went to my friend's Bonanza, he's up in Kenosha and he was doing some, approaches and, cruising around with him. I said to him, God, this sounds all Chinese to me. And it's exactly what he said. He goes, Alex, he goes, if I can do this, you can do this. And, you guys know the story. And so, again, I thought it was something that I was never going to be able to do. But like I told you guys before, you grow up, you become an adult, you start to make a little money where you can afford to do this hobby. And then it works out. It's interesting when I hear Amelia, she's 30 years old. When I was 30 years old, it didn't even pop in my mind. I mean, I would still cruise around the airport and take a look at planes, but I never even thought about even taking an introductory flight because it just wasn't in the cards at that point in time. And I think that's, the deal with a lot of folks, really.
Because of the financial aspects, you mean?
Financial aspects, the cost on what it costs to fly, today versus maybe, when you hear these stories about somebody, what they paid on the Hobbs 25 years ago. I just can't.
But you made less. I wanted to fly since I was, 5 years old. And I just always wanted to do it and cost never came in. And, again, I've admitted this already once in the radio show, so the secret is out, but money that was given to me to go to school, college, I blew it all and then some. I went deep into the hole taking flying lessons, and thank God the FBO stuck with me. I worked there, and I took another loan out that I never told anyone about. It didn't matter what my means were. I was addicted. I'm afflicted.
Right, right. You know? Well, so, I still think it costs more today than it did back then.
Yeah, we didn't make that much money back then.
I think you're definitely right. Well, I got my license in 2002. Which is still, the planes weren't,
2002, and you got 7,000 hours or whatever? That's all.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
You're kind of a big deal.
Oh, you are. But to go back to your point, Alex, I think it's exponentially just like risen a lot. Maybe, I don't know. Maybe it has, linearly risen, but I don't think so. I got my license, with $3,000.
Well, and I got mine in 76, and I was paying, it would have started off $19 an hour for a warrior and $17 for a 150 for the spin training. And there was 25, and I forget what the instructor was. But first of all, I was a student at that point, but even when I got to college, I think we were making, you know, you hope to make $800 a month. And, right. You know, people made less than that. But I don't know. Someone would have to tell me that's a lot smarter, done the research on whether salaries and flights have grown in a consistent manner, and it's just as much burden now, then I can't answer the question.
Yeah.
I would think that it's about the same, but I might be wrong.
Yeah.
You know, talking about cost, I have to make a correction of something that I said on the radio show here a few weeks ago. And I said that the $100 hamburger doesn't even exist anymore. I have to say that's wrong.
Wrong.
Wrong. Because when we went to Janesville a couple of weeks ago, and, you know, we all shared the cost. Now, what was it, $91?
$92 and change per person, and then with the meals, about $100.
So, you know, if you get 15, 20 guys together, you can do it.
That was something pretty cool. That you know, and you do get that. And I was surprised. I was going to post that picture on the AOPA Flying Club fan page or Facebook page. To show the power of a flyout like that, we got 15 guys together. We had three airplanes. We flew $1,200 worth of aviation, you know, Hobbs time, and you know the total bill. I did the math three times, and I'm like, it's $90 per person. Holy cow!
Yeah, it was neat. It's nice. It's a way to get everybody up there, and you know, if you're not necessarily flying, but you're sitting in the front seat, and the nice thing about it was you know, you had Lewis Bowers, you had Stone.
Right.
Jim Stone. Jim Stone, I think, really was tickled because he took the 22 up there, and then I had him sit in the front of my 20 on the way back. And, you know, Bowers was the first time he was in the back seat of the 20. It was his first ride in a Cirrus, and I couldn't believe all the room in it. So it was just nice, you know, to kind of open up guys even within the club that never been in any of the other club planes
right.
yet because they were training in the Archer. You know, everybody goes for an occasional ride with somebody else, but it's just nice to kind of almost play like musical chairs with the plane.
Exactly.
And get in there. And, when you guys went up with the 310, believe me, I would have given up my seat in my plane just to go fly the 310 because I like getting in that one.
Yeah. That thing sounds pretty cool on takeoff. You know, I was going to fly up the Sky Arrow. So here's another power behind this thing. Yeah. Me and Lewis Bowers, we're going to fly the Sky Arrow up to Janesville, but the battery was drained, and we couldn't get started before the engine, the battery quit on us. But so the 310 turned around, you turned around, you came by and picked us up, and I hopped in the 310, and Lewis hopped in the Cirrus, and actually that was a big selling point for a lot of people. You know, there were people that one of my students, Mr. Jim Stone, he was a radio guest here with Spend Joyfully segments back in the fall, but he really wanted to go in that Cirrus, and that was something pretty cool to him, and to be able to see other people fly. You know, he's been mainly flying with me and by himself, so for him to get in the back and be flown around and see a guy like you fly, and our next radio show guest, Mr. Rob Mark from the Airplane Geeks podcast. To see them fly, to see him fly, you know, afterwards whenever we got back, me and him went out to lunch, and he just said how much he learned by sitting in the back of a new airplane and seeing different aviators do their thing.
Yeah, it's neat. It's nice to watch other people fly. Sometimes, you know, like you call it, the tips and tricks, and you get to watch other people do, you know, their craft. And, it's neat. I really enjoyed it. It was really fun. You know, Lewis Bowers actually took a video of the take. He put on Spark Reel, Pawaukee to Janesville in 60 seconds. And I think I joked with you, sometime during the week when you were up in Duluth.
Yeah.
And we were talking every night. And I said, you know, I used to, sometimes if I, you know, I get up in the middle of the night and I just want to burn some time and I just can't fall back asleep, and I start watching, you know, videos of Cirrus flying around and that sort of thing. But with the video clip that Jim Bowers made, you know where I'm going with this, and all the videos that you've taken of me, you know, we went out to Phoenix and back, and various other clips that you had sent me. I find myself now just watching myself all the time. You know, so it's kind of comical, and it's just funny. I mean, Lewis Bowers. I mean, I must have watched that videotape. I mean, that clip so many times, and I'll look at how many views are on there and it'll be like, oh, 62 views. And I'm wondering if I'm like 50 of them.
Yeah, you probably are. Yeah, you're sitting out there and you're going to be, you're 50 of, 50 out of the 60 views, which is pretty hilarious. And I couldn't help to chuckle. You're just like, you and I were talking when I was in Duluth and, after every night, and I'm jaw dropped by the Cirrus and all that. And you're just like, it's 3 a.m. and I find myself at the computer and I love watching videos of myself.
And I tell you, that's what I end up doing now. So it's kind of hilarious. So it was cool that Lewis was able to put that together. And, I think Rob Markey actually took a couple. I'm waiting for him to send that to me and put that in part of the archive arsenal of mine and just keep watching myself go along, which is kind of hilarious. But, it was really neat to listen to you talk. I told my partner, I said, I talk to Al 30 minutes to 45 minutes every night just to get the 411 on what was going up in Duluth. And I mean, you were just, I just can't believe how, I was really surprised about how stoked you were.
Yeah.
And about the plane. And
that never surprises me anymore with him.
And since he's come back, he hasn't said Malibu one time.
Hey, your down payment money is you're going to have to look elsewhere for another.
Just been forfeited.
Yeah, exactly.
By the way, it looks like Baltimore is going to win 34-29 as we have less than 2 minutes left. And
it doesn't interest me.
Yeah,
San Francisco was third and goal when I saw the TV or second goal.
I'm going to edit that part out.
Okay. So, getting back.
No, just kidding.
Getting back to your Duluth trip. And I think I may have mentioned this before, that SR22 turbo, do you see how quiet it is in there?
It is. It's really quiet. I couldn't believe
it's how gotta
quiet
it is. It's got to be about half.
I would say so. It really is. It's, and I don't know why that is. I really don't. I was trying to wrap my brain around that on the drive back down to Chicago. And
I'm assuming it could be because, you're using the exhaust or the turbocharger. It's not as, I don't know. I'm wondering if that's it. I mean, they would probably have an answer for you. I probably should have told you to ask them, but I think that's.
I brought that up to my instructor actually, and he said, "Oh yeah, it is quite." He just acknowledged it. He didn't say anything. And you're probably right. That exhaust is kind of detuned a little bit. To power the turbocharger, and maybe that's it.
I think that's what it is. And when I gave myself a treat and I went to go rent a newer 2010, I think it was, with the perspective that you flew and, it had the yaw dampener in there and everything. And it was really, really neat. And I think I told my one partner, I said, you should really go take yourself, for a treat and go fly that. Don't if you're not prepared to buy it, because you'll want one after you get in there.
Yeah, exactly. I got to tell you that the yaw dampener is a treat.
It's awesome.
That thing is nice. You kind of need that for a tour. We did a VX climb, so a short field takeoff in the turbo. And the thing produces 36.5 inches of manifold pressure, which, it was a high pressure day. It was 0 degrees out, so we're literally producing 120% power on takeoff. And you had to stand on you almost couldn't put enough right rudder in. And, the instructor said, just flip on the yaw dampener and boom, there it is. And
is that the noise it makes? Boom, boom,
boom. Yeah. Well, actually,
it's a beast.
Yeah, it is a beast. And it was nice. Shooting approaches, we were flying it around, in northern Wisconsin, which would be, I guess, let's call it the equivalent of the Muskegon Grand Rapids area, Gary, Indiana, that area for Lake Superior. So you had lake effect weather patterns, lake effect snow, ice, juicy clouds, and things like that. So we're shooting approaches into Rhinelander. It was half mile, gust into 30, and at one point we reported moderate ice, and that thing was just a machine. It was like no big deal for that. And we decided to get out of the ice at some point because it was starting to build a little bit quicker than we were looking for. And, we were 3,000 feet, and we said, all right, let's put 8 on request, go full power. And in a minute, we climb up. We're doing like 2,000 feet per minute at 130 knots.
That's great.
And boom, we're on top. No big deal.
It's awesome. I mean, and I would always have the argument with folks all the time. Everybody knows my mission would be Arizona. Yeah, you need a turbocharger. I mean, it's safer. I mean, you really have to be on your game on the 20 when you fly out there. But I really believe even, and this is just me, I really believe even in the Midwest, I don't care. I mean, I'd like to have a turbocharged motor anyway if I'm flying around in a single, just because, like you said, you can just even just climb out of that stuff. I mean,
yeah.
It's great.
I think that there is a turbocharged airplane in the Midwest, and this is a good Twitter discussion. Do you think turbos and hashtag these tweets and responses with hashtag simple flight? Let us know. Do you think a turbocharged, what are some advantages of turbochargers in the Midwest? And, you know, I think, you know, what I just mentioned, you know, getting on top of the ice and getting, more importantly, getting out of the ice fast. That's huge. You know, in a normally aspirated airplane, your power is going to proportionately bleed off and, you know, therefore your climb rate's going to go down and so on and so forth. We know the rest. We're going to pick up ice.
I mean, when I used to read all these articles on twins and that sort of thing and, you know, boots, guys want Fiki and I remember there was one particular article I read. The guy said, do I want a turbocharged or do I want boots if I were to pick just one of the two? And it would always be the turbocharger.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think it's just for that. And here's another cool thing about the turbocharger that we talked about. You know, the guys, my instructor, you know, he said, okay, now we're at 8,000 feet. Let's actually speed up and get the max true airspeed out of this thing. Helps the TAT, the total air temperature, you know, warm up the wing and use the surface, you know, the friction of the air to heat and melt off some of the ice.
How cool. You think of jets and I usually don't think of single engine piston aircraft.
Yeah, exactly. That was one trick. You know, the temperatures have to be right. You know, if it's too cold, that's not going to happen. If it's, you know, and you can either speed up or slow down to make that happen. And it's pretty cool, you know, to be able to do that in a turbocharger.
Yeah. By the way, as a CFI, I have to ask you a question.
Yeah.
Confirm for me, sublimation is a myth.
No, I don't think so. It's not a myth at all.
I just know that I've picked up ice and I've gotten on top and the ice never goes away. It doesn't grow anymore.
Yeah.
So what's with that?
It needs a, I'm a firm believer in it. You know, there's one time, we were actually flying the King Air out of Salt Lake City going to Chicago, and we did not get – it was just way too – it was one of those times where it was just really, really cold out, and we just couldn't get the temperatures warm enough. But, you know, there was some ice that did sublimate off. Not all of it did, but so we landed with it was weird. It was like it was almost super frozen under the wing. It was strange, but no, it's a very real thing.
I believe that there's a manufacturing opportunity to make a wing out of a material that ice won't stick to.
Yeah.
We gotta invent that.
Ice-X.
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 Say that really fast.
see more butts, please. I'd like to see more butts.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, no. ICEX is a legitimate. We have it on our King Air.
But then why do you need boots?
Well, it's that material that shines the boots and makes it
slippery.
Yeah, makes it slippery.
Yeah, but obviously no one has the anti-ice metal or material yet.
You need to find ice's kryptonite.
Yeah, exactly. And I know it exists.
It's called 80 degrees.
Yeah, or it's called Teflon. I don't know. That would be funny if all we had to do was spray Pam on their wings before we kick off.
Exactly.
So that new Cirrus, that's an extra 200 pounds useful load on that, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, extra 200 pounds.
They rent one of those on the field, right?
What's that?
They rent one of those on the field.
I don't know. Here at Palwaukee?
Yeah.
Where?
Brand new one?
Yeah, well, maybe it's not a 13. I think it's a 12, maybe 11. I don't know.
Yeah. I think it's coming out with the extra 200 pounds.
Yeah, oh, not with the, I don't know about the 200.
That's what we were talking about.
Extra 200 pounds.
Could you rent one that like you rented, or like you used up the CSIP training?
Oh, you could rent those all over. Yeah. But, you know, the new model, Generation 5, which we're going to hear more about on, our first show in March, I believe.
What big game is on that night?
None. It's a simple flight, it's a simple flight, gulping beauty hashtag contest.
Yeah. Who's going to be on the first Sunday in March?
Mr. Gary Black.
I know Gary.
Yeah. Gary's, he's a great guy. I spent some time with him up in Duluth. And he's going to be talking about the Cirrus's Generation 5 aircraft, which actually, which, you know, if you read anything about it, it you do get the extra 200 pounds in the useful load. That's huge. You know, that's unfortunately, that's about 75% of an Al Waterloo, but that's, you know, if... You know, but if somebody were to harpoon me, maybe that would be...
Hey, that's my life. I ate breakfast twice on Saturday. I needed to be harpooned.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. Well,
so Black, when he comes, is it going to be done over the phone, or is he flying here with the Cirrus?
Are we going to fly to Duluth?
Yeah, we've got a dilemma to solve.
I want to go on the road more. I admit it.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, we should take 224 Romeo Whiskey.
I think I'd like that trip.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe we will do it.
Maybe I can make a lesson out of it. I can shoot some approaches on the way.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Done. Deal. Sold.
So maybe does Gary, he lives in Duluth, right?
Yeah, he does.
Yeah. Okay. We could do that.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'll kind of take off Monday morning.
Yeah.
Because if it's anything like our trip to Oshkosh a couple months ago and I spent till 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock in the morning trying to de-ice that wing.
Well, we'll bring TKS fluid or
spray,
something.
Spray bottles.
We'll be more prepared.
Yeah.
So that was, but yeah, so anyway, with this, going back to this 200 pound increase, that would be a lot of, that's a huge increase in an airplane. You know, if you think about that, you know, it's going to be a true four place aircraft with luggage. And, you know, they actually have a fifth seat now.
What, and they're what, 91 gallons, 92 gallons?
Yeah.
Something like that.
92 gallons. So that's, I mean, that's something to be really excited about and very, you know, that's the one thing I say, think about Cirrus is that, you know, I don't even think they know what they really have. You know, it's a very entrepreneurial company. And it's really, really neat to see that. Not just with the airplane, you know, they know that they make a great airplane, but all the other side effects that are kind of going on outside that you know, are inspiring and innovating, you know, other aspects of aviation, which I think are making it better.
I take a lot of lessons from technology field, of which I've made my living for the last 30 years, and it was interesting. Every time a new operating system came out, the world changed.
Yep.
So first it was something we call, you guys are probably too young to remember, CPM. Then from CPM it went to DOS. From DOS it went to Windows. And every time, you know, under CPM, WordStar was the word processor of choice. And then WordPerfect was in the DOS world. And then Windows came out, became Microsoft Word and all that. And I see the similarities and the parallels in aviation. And we have had paradigm shifts, and Cirrus came out of the one that took place at about the turn of the century.
Yeah.
It sounds funny to say that, with the glass panel and the ballistic parachute. And we're seeing it again, and Cirrus may be poised to do a repeat, if you will, with the jet, with all the things that they're bringing to advance the technology.
Yeah.
They could be one of those companies that makes the jump twice.
Yeah.
You know, and within two paradigm shifts and be the leader. It doesn't happen much.
No, it doesn't. And I think they, from what I saw and the vibe that I got going to Duluth, I saw that. You know, you could feel it. Mm-hmm. if that makes any sense. And, you know, they got some pretty cool things and that they're working on. And, I don't know, it's just really exciting. To see that. It's very fresh and nice.
It is a neat aircraft. And I mean, that's when I started, you know, I always said, geez, if I'd buy a plane, that would be the one I would get. Cause the parachute really sold me.
And your wife.
Yeah. And my wife as well. And, you know, I think we all know this, especially you, Mark, you've been flying the Cirrus longer than I have, but you have out there what I call the Cirrus haters.
Oh, absolutely. There's people on this, listening to us right now.
Right.
Thinking that they're,
And the question,
210 or the 180, which is fine airplanes.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And, you got me saying it now.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the thing is that I always wonder, you know, if you want to call them the Cirrus haters or somebody's not really a big fan of the chute or is not sold on the idea, I wonder if any of them ever went for a ride in one.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah. You know, it's, again, I sometimes bring up silly analogies, but, you know, I grew up on an electric stove. My wife grew up on a gas stove, and we couldn't get together. Which,
what do you want? No, no, it's got to be electric. It's because what you know. And so I've used gas, but electric was always my preference. And I think it's the same with airplanes, that people love their airplane, whatever it may be, and they can get into the next greatest airplane, but they're sold on high wing versus low wing. They're sold on Cessna versus Piper versus, you know, Beach or whatever.
But everybody I've ever taken for a ride in the Cirrus has always loved it. I mean, even if they were never in a Cirrus before, my friend with the Bonanza, he went in there and said, God, this is really nice. And then, another buddy of mine who is a neighbor of his, and he gets in there and he's like, he goes, okay, it doesn't have six seats, but this is really wide in here.
Yep.
You know,
you might be right.
It's very comfortable. And, even the gentleman that came from Oshkosh when we went out for breakfast that time, it was the first time he was in a Cirrus. And I think everybody kind of gets impressed when they first get in there. And I guess what I'm saying is, anybody that I ever took in there that never went for a ride in one's always is, because it's like a wow factor almost when they get in there.
Right. Well, you know what? It is. You know, we went to Arizona and back in your Cirrus.
Right.
And, you know, it's a nice plane. I thought it was great for, I wouldn't really want to fly in any other airplane unless it's, you know, I'm the only person in a cabin class seating in the back, you know. But who wants to be in the back, right? So, but to be in the front of that, it was very comfortable. But one thing, you know, flying this thing around is the first chance up in Duluth where I got to actually really take controls of the plane and fly it. You know, we were flying in some pretty harsh conditions. And, I tell you what, flying that airplane, I felt like a single pilot airline pilot, which I think that's pretty hard to kind of cultivate in a pilot. I'll be honest, it wasn't really necessarily my plane of choice before, but there was one instance where I was sold on the parachute. We were flying, we were actually flying one of the airplanes around. It was the CEO's plane, believe it or not, but we had a governor indicator issue, prop governor. And we're flying around. We're in moderate ice. We're at 6,000 feet. We're in the north woods of Wisconsin, and it's 20 degrees out, and it's snowing like cats and dogs. And, you know, it was funny because I'm just sitting there. I'm like, okay, well, the RPMs are reading red right now. We didn't hear any fluctuation in the engine, but I was starting to think. I'm like, okay, do we turn around? What, you know, I was about ready to start turning around to go back to Duluth, and, you know, we determined it was an indicator problem, but For a second there, I was just like, okay, well, there's really no big deal because just pull the chute. And to be in a situation like that and not to have any worry, your ability to troubleshoot a problem just goes through the roof. It's pretty nice.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and those, well, again, you don't have to sell me. That's what I fly.
Yeah.
Although I am excited to fly the Bonanza. Yeah, it's not as wide, your little shoulder to shoulder, but a Bonanza is just a quality machine all the way through. And even the old 74 that I'm flying, what can I say? I like to fly. Put me in an airplane, I'm pretty happy.
It's a nice plane, that Bonanza.
Have you been in it?
I don't fit in it correctly.
You know, climb the seat a little bit.
Somebody should just be harpooned.
Yeah, be harpooned.
No, he's just too... He's too torso long.
I wear my headset, and I can even touch my head on the ceiling. You
know, yeah.
It's just, when I go on my friend's
Bonanza. Well, recline it slightly. You'll be fine. You and I will go fine.
All right. Sounds good.
You'll like it.
Exactly.
Exactly.
Exactly. Everybody exactly. Take,
awesome.
Take a drink on me.
Yeah, right.
I wonder how many people are actually, two sheets to the wind right now, because of that drinking game.
I suspect not many, but a lot are just because of the game.
Yeah.
Right? The Super Bowl game.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what? I don't feel bad about missing most of the Super Bowl.
I don't feel bad at all.
I've enjoyed this, and I can say, boy, it was just so fun to talk to Neely. I was looking forward just because of the name and all that, but, came away with a really huge amount of respect for her.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking through my head as we're sitting here, quite honestly, okay, I got turned down by my local high school. I'm going to go to other high schools.
Absolutely.
So screw them. If they don't want to take advantage of this opportunity to enlighten their kids, somebody does.
Oh, and there's a group of individuals out there that would love for that to happen. And, you know, we can, that's something that's a neat thing to give back on.
And that's what I want to do. You know, you follow your passion. We're all passionate about aviation.
it's not about money. It's just about getting to talk about
it. You're going to be the Paul Newman of aviation, I can tell.
Well, I don't know that I understand that. I mean, I know Paul Newman.
Paul Newman was a full, you know, like, he buys salad dressings.
Absolutely.
And all the, he's a big philanthropist.
Yes. I always bought Newman's Own and all that.
Yeah, salad dressings would go back to, what would they go back to? Oh, all the profits would go back to charity.
Yeah, I think it was a percentage of everything he sold, actually.
Yeah, yeah. No, Paul, yeah. I'm very fond of that guy as an actor. Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid going to be one of my favorite.
Yeah.
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 So what are you doing this week in aviation?
Well, actually, a couple things. We're going to hop back in the King Air, fire up those bad boy PT-6s, and take them out to Philadelphia. And then come back, and I got a couple.
It's always good to come back.
Yeah, it is. It is. Actually, you know what? I learned something this week, that Air Force One has had one more takeoff than it has landings. Silence.
So, yeah, silent. Chirp. I'm trying to think through it. So was there Air Force One? Did they ditch one or what?
No, there was a – so when is Air Force One Air Force One?
When the president's in there.
Exactly. There you go. So okay. There's a little trick in there. But when
it's like, it's like Marine One.
So how did he get off in the middle?
So it was so to speak. There was a – so when do you think – when do you think about, you know, when Air Force One existed and think about the presidents there and which president – during which presidency.
Oh, wait a minute. So it actually had one more landing than takeoff.
Yep.
Yeah. So Lyndon B. Johnson was sworn in as president while he was in the air. After Kennedy was shot, right?
Yeah.
I think that's it. That's what I'm assuming. So he wasn't president when they took off, but he was president.
Well, I thought it was on the tarmac.
No, it was in the air.
In the air? Yeah.
Are you old enough to remember that?
Well, I think you're right. I think it was in the air.
Yeah. I can see the picture
of
him being sworn in.
Yep.
Yeah. That's a great trivia question. Actually, did we talk about what you taught me about the landing light on the airliners, what it signifies?
When?
Did we talk about it on last week's show? Or was it
after? That was Pat Flanagan.
Oh, there you go. That's right.
That was
the
whole caveat of the whole show. Yeah.
For those of you that weren't listening, I did not know that the landing light on an airliner comes on when they get cleared to land, and it's a checklist item for them that they say, are we cleared to land? Yeah, the landing light's on.
Well, it's not necessarily a checklist. It's not your landing clearance, and it's not your it's just like a little simple check.
Yeah. Yeah, I understand. I don't mean to overstate it.
But. Yeah, oh yeah, no. It's just written between the lines of, it comes on when, when you get the clearance.
Yeah, that's cool.
Actually, you know what? That trick actually saved, I was jump seating, out to DCA. I was maybe 6 months as a brand new co-pilot, at the airline. I was jump seating out to DCA. We're on the River Visual, the 19. I was in a United, Airbus 319. And we're flying down the river. We're about on a 2 mile wiggly final, because
a wiggly final
was flying runway 19, and I look up and I saw that the landing light, you know, the approach lights were on. All the taxi lights were on, signifying that we got approach clearance. But that, you know, we're on a very short final, and the landing light wasn't on. And I asked the crew. And I said, hey, are you guys clear to land? And they're like, oh, my goodness. You know, then they call the tower. Tower's looking for them. You know, they're essentially cleared to land regardless. But they're like, great save, great save. And that was a save where you look at the landing light. And
switch wasn't that, so the crew had never heard the words cleared to land.
Yeah, exactly. Cool. So that was pretty neat to, these guys with old gray-haired airline pilots and me as a little, 22-year-old jump seater. I say, hey, you cleared to land.
Yeah.
So, but good. You know, that was a lot of fun.
I'm sure. So, okay, so that's this week, and I've got a lot of stuff to do at the office, but I'm going to try and get up in the bonanza. We can get a break in some of the weather. I'd like to do some more VFR flying in it. What about next week's show?
Next week's show is going to be another fun show. One of the funniest guys in aviation, not Rod Machado.
Ah, it must be another guy who has a Rod or Rob name.
Yeah, so Mr. Rob Mark from the Aviation Geeks podcast, the award-winning jet wine author and
he's written a book. He's been a controller. He's been an airline pilot. He's been flown the A380 as a whatever he does as a writer, I guess, for AOPA.
Yeah, writer for AOPA. He works at Northwestern University.
I did a private with him.
I did a flight review with him 2 years ago.
Yeah, I gave him a flight review this year.
There you go.
Yeah, so this guy's been, he's got a pretty big solid mark in aviation. And
is that a joke? Oh, he's got a solid mark?
Oh, that's it. And his Rob Mark is his name. Yeah. So, yeah. Pun was intended in
Very
that.
Very good. Well, that's exciting. Yeah, we know Rob from our flying club that we're in, Leading Edge Flying Club. By the way, I have to give a plug to not only AOPA, but a little bit of self-promotion. I am so proud that they asked me to lead their next webinar on their flying club series.
Woo!
February 13th, AOPA. They say it's just on selecting an aircraft for your flying club. Actually, I've put a few more things. I'm going to do more. Around not only selecting, then sourcing, and then managing the aircraft. Try to get that in some 45-minute webinar. So
yeah.
That's coming up on the 13th.
So we stand corrected with the Air Force One bit.
Okay. I was wrong again?
Yep, we
Son
were.
Of a, I, go, you said we. You're trying to protect me. What did I say wrong?
Well, it was Nixon. And this is what I thought it was, but then I was successfully
convinced
by Nixon, you
guys. Nixon?
Nixon took off. His Air Force One, and then he had resigned, so he was still the president.
Oh, I remember that. That was
70. And then Ford was sworn in as president.
Was it Gerald Ford that?
Yep. So Air Force One was no longer Air Force One because Nixon was no longer the president, so therefore it had one more takeoff than it had landing.
All right, so the picture I remember of... maybe I'm just its age. So when Kennedy was shot... Who was sworn in?
Well, it was Lyndon B. Johnson, wouldn't he become the president automatically, or do you have to be sworn in? I don't know.
I don't know. I just remember the picture, and I thought it was an Air Force One.
It was an Air Force One. Yeah, but I think it might have been on the ground, but they had to get him sworn in, but he was by default the president because the current one was...
As unable to perform.
Exactly. So, but anyway, I can't believe it. It's Super Bowl Sunday and,
2200 hours here.
2200 hours, Zulu time, something in the O somethings. 0400?
Yeah, I think that'd be 04.
Yeah, very good. Well, nice job, Mark.
You too? Yeah, we were, I don't know if we can admit this, but hey, out there with the truth, we were a little worried about Super Bowl getting in the way of the program, but thanks to Amelia Earhart for being a true trooper and sticking with us, living up to her commitment to be on the show. She did a great job, and I think you and I did okay, too, and talking about our passion.
Yeah, absolutely. But we're going to be back next week with the passionate guy, Mr. Rob Mark. It's going to be a great show. He's got a good radio voice.
Yeah, he does voiceovers and stuff.
Oh, man.
I am what I am. my voice is what my voice is.
Yeah. No changing it now. Yeah. Maybe you could start smoking cigars or something
like
that.
Or you can just hit the special effects on that.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So, but we'll play with that next week.
Sounds good.
Yeah. Anyway, great show again tonight, everyone.
We thank everybody for their participation. Sorry we didn't get to two more tweets, but appreciate everyone tweeting in. We do get them all and read them all.
Absolutely. Until next week, remember hashtag SimpleFlight. You're going to love it.
And
don't forget hashtag gulping beauty.
Yeah, we got a lot of things. And to everyone, blue skies.
And happy, happy tailwinds. Good night, everyone.
Good night.
You're listening to Simple Flight Aviation Radio with Al Waterloo and Mark Heppner on www.simpleflight.net.
Simple Flight Radio, ready for takeoff.
What do you think about flying? Is it a sport? A business? Is it easy or difficult? Is it boring or exciting? Alan Waterloo and Mark Eppner think it may be any of those things, but they like to make it simple. This is Simple Flight Radio, where Mark and Al talk about the many aspects of aviation and the amazing people doing amazing things to make this world a better place.